Hi, I'm Tara Lee, and welcome to Starbeing, your cosmic journey to self-discovery, higher consciousness, and spiritual exploration. This podcast serves as a guiding light, illuminating the path to wisdom, healing, and conscious living. Let Starbeing ignite your inner light as we transcend limitations and tap into the universal consciousness that unites and empowers all of us. Welcome to episode 10, Overcoming Shame to Live Your Full Expression with Sarah Loginus. Sarah is a certified and award-winning coach, leadership mentor, international speaker, and shame healer. She helps people move out of old feelings of inadequacy and into new patterns of growth so they can be who they're meant to become. I first met Sarah in a mastermind many years ago now, and we've continued our friendship. She is such a light and she has such a non-judgmental presence. You'll hear this in our conversation. I feel her work needs full illumination because with shame, as we discuss on this episode, it really is one of the lowest vibrations in human consciousness. And on the other side of that vibrational frequency is love and authenticity. So we speak on this episode how shame can really be holding us back, and it can be this invisible force that can really stop us leading the life that we were meant to live. And I think this is why Sarah and I connect so deeply, because underneath both our work is, you know, really empowering you to become your full potential. So I hope that you have so many takeaways from this episode. It was such a joy to have this conversation with Sarah. And if you are enjoying Starbeing, I would be so grateful if you left a rating and a review and let me know on Instagram your takeaways and what you enjoyed from this episode. Welcome, Sarah. It's so good to have you on Starbeing.
It is so good to be here. I am so excited to talk with you. I just love you.
The feeling is mutual, definitely. We have just been catching up before, and yeah, it's just so deep, and I've missed our conversation. So I'm excited for our listeners to experience your wisdom and your work, because as I was saying to you, I did a deep dive on your work, and I think this is so needed and something that I don't think a lot of people are exploring or have awareness around, or things that are holding them back that they don't actually have words around. So I'm really interested to dive into your work. But before that, I would love for you to dive into a little bit of your story, Sarah, how you got to do the work that you're doing now. And I guess more of that pivotal point that you realize, like, this is something that I really want to empower people with.
Awesome. I just love you. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Me too.
I just had to say that first. Okay, my story. So my previous work was actually in professional sports. So like polar opposite side of the work around guilt and shame, I would say. And I had spent a decade working to get towards the Nike headquarters. So I worked in the world of corporate partnerships and marketing, actually, and landed in the world of professional football. And I think a number of things happened. I've always been a very existential person. I feel like we've had several conversations around this, of like these bigger questions of like, why am I here? What is my purpose? Like, what am I supposed to do? My life and my work must matter. And what is all of this about? And I think I always had that from a very young age. And so getting into the world of sports, it's not like I'm knocking it by any means. But there was just this moment in time where things looked really good on the surface. And I'm being approached and interviewing with various sports teams and leagues from two different countries. I'm managing multi-million dollar corporate sponsorship deals, traveling across the country, hosting, you know, CEOs in their various corporate suites. And at this time, I was being awarded a top 525 to watch in the sports business industry across Canada. So again, things looked very good on the surface. I say my LinkedIn looked exceptional, all of the really important things in life. And I had this, you know, regardless of all of these things that were going on, deep down every single morning, I felt so deeply unfulfilled and like I lacked any real meaning and purpose in my life. And I was experiencing severe anxiety attacks where I was also wearing heart monitor strapped to my chest on a regular basis to monitor the anxiety attacks I was having. And I was like, this is so weird because I've reached this certain pinnacle in my corporate career where things look good and I'm receiving, you know, great validation, external validation and approval and acceptance from people, you know, all of these things. And yet, so like, what's the issue here? What am I missing? And I firmly believe God, source, creator, whatever you want to call it, gives us signs when we may be out of alignment with perhaps the work that we were intended to do in the world. And I believe that that was what a lot of these anxiety attacks and like the severe health deterioration started to do. And so I did what I think probably a lot of people do, which is, okay, God, I hear you, but I'm still pretty sure that I have a better idea for my life than you. So I'm just, there is just gonna like... Right. I'm like, I'm good, God. Like you do you. Let me just handle this. We'll see what happens. Okay. And so I did what I think a lot of women going through an existential crisis does. And I wound up at a yoga studio. And within a couple, I was like, okay, this is great. I think this is where enlightenment happens. You know, I'll zone in on my breath and bend my body into interesting postures and I'll figure life out from here. And within a few minutes, I was consumed with so much anxiety that I collapsed. I sprint to the change room and I collapse on the change room floor and I start to sob and shake and vomit uncontrollably. And that was kind of a pinnacle or a defining moment where I remember thinking at this point, I'm 24, 25. I had reached a point in which, how do I put this into words? I had reached a critical point where it was like, it has become more painful not to listen to what I believe God has in store for me than for me to continue to live this life only for and driven by external validation and seeking external approval, which is what it was. And something I teach is I teach people this concept of the circles of self-betrayal. And I think there are so many things that accumulate like layers of an onion over time in which either other people can betray our highest and truest nature, our core essence, and all of the things that we can also do to betray our core essence and the sacredness and the highest and truest version of ourselves within. And so I think I just had reached this point where I had, you know, betrayed who that version was, or for so long, where that final collapse was just the tipping point or the boiling point of not listening to whether it was that inner guidance, that intuition, what my soul had been trying to communicate, I think, for a very long time. So in that moment, it is that scary moment of uncertainty. I have no idea what it is, but I know that the previous decade in which I've been working towards this is no longer viable. And so it's in that moment, I was like, okay, I'm kind of open to and trusting to guidance and all of that. And that eventually landed me in, I don't know, I was at a yoga convention. I was like, maybe it's yoga. And there was 300 or 400 different yoga stands around. And then in the very back corner, this like lonely little table or stand about life coaching. my whole body lit up when I got, I didn't end up going with this woman, bless her heart. It didn't look like she was very busy. But I ended up finding a different program, Base of Australia, as you're aware, the Beautiful You Coaching Academy, and obtained my coaching certification. And that was something that kind of dawned in me at the time. It was like, I want to support other women who, like me, maybe have betrayed a part of their soul or a part of these deeper longings and yearnings of what we want our life to look like, or what we feel most drawn or called to do, but yet all of the fears or the shame or the guilt and other things that come up prevent us from actually being who we truly are and doing the work that we want to do in the world. And so that was, that ultimately kind of kickstarted a journey in supporting other people. And what I had found after a few years of working with people from their teens up to their 60s or 70s, different ages or phases in their life, that there was a common thread that linked many people together when it came to this life of self-betrayal or preventing ourselves from making the changes that we so desperately wanted to make in our life. And it was the two most disempowering emotions, which were guilt and shame. Mm-hmm. Guilt more so in the sense of I am not worthy or deserving of actually making a change or you know, shooting for the moon here or wanting to pursue my passion, and shame often in its most simplest form. I am not good enough, or I am not worthy of this, or that's where we kind of let fear of failure or fear of judgment from other people or this fear of not enoughness creep in and prevent us from living really beautiful lives.
I love that. And as you were talking about, you know, that dark night of the soul that you went through, that existential crisis, there's so much freedom in that moment when you are retelling that story. Like, I just felt that, in the sense that you kind of release everything that is, you know, holding you back, and you kind of get to do everything in a new way, like letting go. I think it's fascinating with your work that, you know, working with your clients, you realize that this was a through line, because doing a deep dive on what actually shame is. And, you know, you touched on the vibrational aspect of shame. And we pre-recording were talking about David Hawkins in his book, Power Versus Force. And he talks about that being the shame being the lowest level of consciousness that vibrates, you know, in our chakras, in our body. And how you mentioned that is keeping us stagnant, how it can potentially silence us. And like you said, stop us from living the life that our soul wants us to live. So I'd love to hear from you, Sarah, with this work. What do you think the core of shame comes from? And how can it show up? Like, you've mentioned some of the things, but how can it show up? Because it's not something that's talked about often. So it's something that we might not even be aware of, that emotion of what shame actually is or what it actually feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. And I think we all steer clear of it, because it's a heavier, I mean, I see this in even, I like all of the speaking engagements I've done or places where I've hosted workshops, or even, you know, I've done some stuff with a studio or with yoga studio owners or other businesses. And the message is always the same. Sarah, is there any way that we can kind of change the title so it doesn't sound so heavy? I'm like, okay, what did you have in mind? It's like, can we just remove the word shame?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I don't care what you call it. But the thing is we will continue to be held hostage by something that we cannot name or discuss, and realizing the ways that it is, can be detrimentally harmful to so many areas in our life. And something that I always reiterate is shame does not discriminate. Mm. It impacts every single human being. I've worked with very wealthy individuals. I've worked with, you know, beautiful fitness models. I've worked with incredibly gifted creatives and artists, professional athletes, people who are incredibly brilliant and bright and powerful individuals. And so what shame can do is it can make even the most successful or powerful or capable human beings feel deep down that they are not good enough or inadequate. And so to answer your question, I think one thing that I really try to reiterate is that shame is, like, in its most simplistic form, it's just this belief that I'm not good enough. So therefore, I must change or mold or adapt or fix myself, whether that's acquiring more money, more wealth, more, you know, higher status or whatever it is. And, you know, drive and motivation, obviously that's important. But if it's coming from a place of I'm not good enough until I get this, that can actually never be satiated. That's a never-ending journey of trying to find an answer or try to source something externally in order to prove our own value and worth. And so for women specifically, that can get us into some very dangerous situations in which, you know, I've supported a handful of women out of abusive relationships in the past or controlling relationships in the past. And so that's a dangerous thing, because then what happens is if we are unable to source that worthiness internally, then we will seek external sources to find our value and our worth. And so that can be incredibly disempowering relationships that don't honor a woman's value. And this is vice versa. Like this can also be, I've worked with male clients in also controlling and abusive relationships. But it can make us believe, okay, this is what love looks like. This is the best I can get. And I should just be grateful for what I have. I have supported, you know, a brilliant woman she's an incredibly successful doctor, really powerful healer archetype. And she nearly did not go and do her MCAT out of fear of what other people thought, and this fear of, well, what happens if I don't get the grade that I want? So she was going to deprive herself and the many people that she will impact in the world out of this root of, or again, from this space of fear or shame of perfection and what people think. And so I think that's a lot of it is, A, it can prevent us from making major life transitions that our soul like deeply craves and desires. I think it can prevent people from showing up fully in relationships. And I see that a lot. It's that thought of, okay, I need to be perfect in order to be worthy of love. So I'm going to hide all of the messy, imperfect qualities and parts about myself. And what that does is then we're showing up almost with like a restricted heart in our relationships, terrified what will happen if they see the real us. And it deprives us from experiencing the great, I think, intimacy and depth of emotion connection that we can experience if we're able to show up fully and allow ourselves to be loved fully in our beautiful imperfection. So I see various ways in which it can impact people from, you know, personal lives, professional lives, all of that. And to answer your question in terms of how it gets started, so many ways. I'm a bit of like, we've talked about this in the past, but like I'm very fascinated with various world religions and theology. And I've been diving more and more into, I think, where female symbolism and female power got lost. Mm. And the earliest signs, there's an author called Carol P. Kreis. She writes a book called The Laughter of Aphrodite. And she was, she went to, I think it was Yale School of Divinity. And what she found was that the earliest stages or the earliest signs of patriarchal language was in 3500 BC. So this isn't just a new thing. The idea of, or the concept of patriarchy is not new by any means. I think it was fourth century where all of the goddess temples got wiped out and destroyed. Mm-hmm. In learning even about, you know, the origins of Christianity, where we have early signs of female leaders in the church Some of the women are speaking of, you know, Mary Magdalene as a perfect example, a true sign of female leadership and power, symbolism of female leadership and power, was eventually kind of reverted down to a repentant whore just because one pope decided. And then, you know, again, this beautiful depiction of female power and just authority, again, it was lost for I don't know how many hundreds of years, where the world sees her as, oh, she was just simply a prostitute who eventually repented her sins. And that's why, or that's the picture that we have of her. So I just got fascinated with what are all of these moments in history, like really critical and fundamental moments in history, in which women were deprived of actually being allowed to see the sacredness and the divinity, the power of this divine female presence. And so when you're thinking of that, compounded with a lot of world religions where you know, women receive this message where our worth and value is dependent on seeking repenting our sins, but seeking approval and forgiveness from a male father figure. You know, like you realize what women have been up against in terms of understanding their true value and worth, and it's not a surprise. And so we get into these times now where, you know, we have multi-billion-dollar industries that profit and thrive and exist solely based and make billions of dollars solely based on a woman believing that she's not good enough exactly as she is. Mm. And we punish women for the simple act of aging rather than honoring the sacredness and the wisdom that comes from a life fully lived and the wisdom that she can share. So that's something, a thing that I really try to teach, is so much of this shame around a woman's value and worth was never ours to carry. It's no longer ours to carry. It never was ours to carry. This has been building up for generations, and we're reaching this like really critical point in human history where it's this moment of, or this kind of fork in the road of either we survive or we perish. Mm-hmm. Or as a population. And so we no longer have the time for women to doubt their worth or their brilliance and what they can contribute. And I think a lot of what we will see is this beautiful shift of more women stepping more into their power, more into, you know, the gifts that they were meant to share with the world. More ways of creative thinking and solutions and innovations and ideas that our world so desperately needs right now. But the shame of who we are and that the devaluation of the woman as a whole must be released in order for that to happen.
What you said, women no longer have time to doubt their worth.
No time.
Yeah, I think that is so incredibly powerful. And just as you're speaking about the history and more of the ancestral and the past, and, you know, looking at, you know, past lives and even our own generations, like our mother, her mother, and that kind of that lineage as well, it's really interesting for us to start unpacking what are the patterns, like what are the patterns that I'm experiencing? Were they the same as my mum was experiencing? Are those the same that her mum was experiencing? And I think that is a really important thing to start looking at, like where are we bringing these patterns forward and where can we start to change that narrative? Because it's like, it's a well-worn groove, like it's going to be easier for us to get back into that pattern. And so I think, yeah, all that research that you've done is an opportunity for us to break out of that mold. So I love that you've gone and done that research. I also, you touched on perfectionism, which I find is so interesting when it comes to shame, because I didn't actually see this link before, that, you know, having this closer relationship with shame, it can lead us more into perfectionism, because we don't want to experience or risk the same thing happening again. So if we're perfect, then I don't have to worry, or if I'm striving for perfection, then I don't have to worry about this heavy emotion of shame. And so we're trying to use this positive emotion to kind of mask up this heavier one. And so I think that has been really interesting because in my life, I do see so many women striving for this perfection. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that that is something that, you know, if we resonate with that, that seeking, where can we dig deeper and where is that perfection coming from? And I think that, you know, you uncovering the layers of this and at the core of your work, Sarah, and why I'm so excited for it is that it is all about empowerment for the woman. And I feel, you know, looking at this from an astrology lens, we're in the divine feminine, we're in Pisces at the moment, according to Vedic astrology. So this is an opportunity for that divine feminine to rise. So I think this is, yeah, the time and the opportunity to do it. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on, because this is something that I've seen really recent in the last week, is, you know, there's this beautiful like empowerment, yes, empowering the woman, but I've been in situations where the men are now actually being shamed for women not having a space in a certain area or domain. So I'd love to know your thoughts on, you know, how do we do this in, because I think that's just like shifting the responsibility. So how can we do this as women in this divine feminine to empower ourselves by not disempowering or blaming? Or yeah, I would just love to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah. And I have to preface this by saying I love men. you know, men get such a bad rap, right? And the thing is that shame impacts men equally as much. So so I did an interview last week where they were saying, oh, and you know, obviously this impacts women more than it does men. And that's not what I have observed. Because what we have also created is a society that demands perfection from men, perfect performance, perfect protection, perfect, you know, all of these things. And so when a male client reaches out to me, I often see the sheer exhaustion of the weight of the world that some of these men feel like they have had to carry. Mm. And I'm just thinking of, so I do, and we were talking about this before, but I do something called a soul session to kick off a series with a client, where it's a full day in person. And for people who may not be able to articulate what is going on in their psyche or subconscious, I actually start with a drawing of just, you know, draw how you're feeling or like what's coming up or like what is like, you know, how are you presently navigating through life. And so I will never forget one of the earlier soul session drawings I ever witnessed or observed from a male client. Is here is this person who comes from a professional football, or not professional football, a professional sports background, incredibly successful. According to his wife's Instagram, you know, they have all the money, the cars, the homes, all, everything, you know, quote unquote, that should lead to great happiness and success. And he's got, you know, this beautiful wife that his friends and teammates would celebrate. He's got approval from all the people. And I remember coming back in the room after, you know, I give him 20 minutes or whatever. And what I witnessed or what he shared was, here is this man, despite all of this, everything that society says will lead to happiness and fulfillment. He is a man who is, his face is distorted in anguish, and he is bound in tight chains with a stake driven into the ground. And he's carrying a barbell that says 10 million pounds. So he's got the weight of the world on his shoulder. And there are all these little thought bubbles saying, help, help, it's getting so dark in here. My legs are getting so tired. I can't do this anymore. What will help? Will more booze help? No. Will more women help? No. Will more sex help? No. Will more drugs? Will more this, this, this? Will more money? And so again, it is this weight of also expecting perfection and perfect performance. And we've also created an environment in which there are very few psychologically safe containers for men to process their own healing and wholing. Because we celebrate the strong, you know, unbreakable, unshakable man, and then we punish them. So it's not even just, we don't create a psychologically safe space for them to do healing and wholing, but there's almost a punishment of when they might express vulnerability or emotion. And I've sometimes seen that working with male clients where not even in their own partnership will they have this psychologically safe space. So I think that is the biggest thing, is how can we also create a non-judgmental, unconditionally loving situation or container with which men can also process their own emotions, and knowing that, again, regardless of performance, regardless of what goes on the outside, their worth is infinite. And it's the same for every human. Every human's worth is infinite. And the lies that we have to wake up to is anyone or anything that tells us that something outside of us then makes us more valuable or makes us then good enough, that is what we have to question. So I see it equally impact men as much as women, and causing harm. The way I see it expressed differently is with men, it can be more like anger and rage, like bursts or outbursts. With women, I see it can be more of somewhat of a cold or a shutting down. Some women describe it as, I just feel indifferent towards life, and kind of a quiet resentment.
Yes, I think that's really important to acknowledge both those ways, in the masculine and the feminine. And with that, Sarah, you mentioned these judgments and those external forces, and these external forces of society. And I would love to know how that works in with shame and the driving force of that. So, and I'm sure like social media can have a play in this as well, but how society expects us to be, to behave, what we should pursue. And do you think this is one of the main sources of why we feel stuck in this shame? Like, because maybe we want something that is different from what we've been told we should want, and then we feel bad that we are not wanting what we've been told that we should.
Yeah, and I actually believe, I've written a bit about this, but that I think we actually live in a very guilt and shame driven society. And so when you think of, again, multi-billion dollar industries that exist and profit off of convincing people that they are not good enough exactly as they are. And I also would never judge anyone that invest in any of these industries, because again, we've received this relentless and constant messaging that only when you look a certain way, or in our society's obsession with looking and remaining young. I heard a plastic surgeon talking about how his most common and popular procedure now is teen girls coming in and asking for their faces, or procedures to make their face look like Instagram filters. So that in it of itself, it's the distorted body images starting at an even younger age. I think there's, you know, our mass addiction to pornography, and this very disillusioned concept of what the beauty and the sacredness of the human body, and ultimately sex is, and are worth tied to it, or are worth linked to it.
This is something that I really wanted to dive in with you, because I recently read Justine Bateman's book on the face, and I found this so fascinating, because she mentions shame. And this is where it started coming up a lot for me, because in her book, she talks about how, especially women, we have, you know, we've got to this point in our life as we get, you know, into our, you know, mid-30s, coming up to our 40s, we've got all this incredible life experience, this wisdom, you know, where, you know, thriving, say. And then there's just this added layer of, okay, well, now your beauty is fading. I'm using quote marks here. Now your beauty is fading. So even though we've transversed, we've got over all these other shameful aspects, maybe we've been able to live more into what we've been wanting to do, and we've kind of like warded off all the society's expectations there. And then we get to this pinnacle and it's just like, oh no, well, you know, your youth is fading now. So you're no longer relevant to society. And it's kind of like this overwhelming kind of like, backwards. Oh, and so, yeah, that made me really think about how as the feminine, where, you know, fighting up this external battle as well. And yeah, so I'd love to know what you think about that, because in her book, she talks about how shame is actually one of the driving forces why women feel compelled to keep up with that youthful appearance, because they feel shameful of their face, that their face is aging. This is a biological, natural progression. There's nothing we can do about it apart from, you know, if you want to go down those alternative, you know, routes. And I just find that blows my mind. We're experiencing extreme shame. And this is why the Botox industry is now billions and billions of dollars. Like, how do we counteract that? How can we, like, change this narrative? And that's what I'm, yeah, really excited to dive in with you about as well. But I just want to acknowledge that we're seeing this in society, because that is, like you say, this plastic surgery, these Botox, these, you know, these filters. And then, yeah, I think about the youth, you know, women in their early 20s already feeling the heaviness of this expectation. And I have so much compassion for that, because that is not something that I thought about in my 20s. I didn't have that added layer of pressure and expectation to be that perfection and that. Yeah. So it's so heavy and multi-layered.
Mm-hmm. And you said a lot of really important things there too. I think we're starting at an even younger because of social media, and a lot of great things can come from obviously social media and advanced technology and all of that. And there's also a shadow to everything. And with that, distorted body images starting at an even younger age. And again, going back to that concept around the shame is generational. So for an example, and I mean, I've seen whether it's, eating disorders, various forms of self-harm, distorted self-image. Again, when I go back to these like soul session drawings, the amount of drawings that I have seen in which women draw themselves, and they're beautiful, beautiful women, they're drawing themselves in the mirror, and the version that is reflected back in the mirror is this very distorted. It's typically a woman that's more overweight than the reflection or the person staring into the mirror. Their face is distorted in this, you know, ugly way. There may be warts and all of the, you know, it's at a deep, like it within their psyche, in a very deep level, it is women are not able to see the beauty or the sacredness of who they are. Mm-hmm. And so then when you're up against all this messaging, and I'm thinking of one woman where she was sharing, where we're talking about this concept of, you know, the circles of self-betrayal or these messages that accumulate over time and compound like interest to a point in which that's just simply the tipping point, is when we start to make, you know, alterations, we fix and mold and adapt ourselves. And again, that there is zero judgment there. Every woman is doing the absolute best and listens to what we have always been told where our value lies, which there has always been an undercurrent message of a woman's worth is intricately linked to their physical appearance.
Mm.
So then women make these decisions, and then we further punish and shame the women who make these decisions to try to fit into this mold of what we were told leads to ultimately our worth or our value. So it's just this like cycle of, you know, this like perpetual cycle of shame towards a woman. But the example I was going to use is, so we're, you know, we're looking at all of these moments in time in which ultimately she no longer saw, or she was disconnected from the reality that her worth is infinite. That's the point that I try to get clients to, is this recognition, my worth is infinite. And anything outside of us that tells us that that is not the case, is likely benefiting from a woman remaining disempowered or not feeling good enough. That can be a relationship, that can be these multi-billion dollar industries, that can be an employer, that can be absolutely anything. But be very mindful, and that's a step that I say, like, be very mindful. First, start looking in or observing your environment and identify, where am I receiving messages in which my worth is not infinite, or in which it is being questioned or devalued? So we may put someone who either has a drug addiction or a pornography addiction or an alcohol addiction or whatever it is into a treatment facility. And we say, okay, wonderful. You know, we poured the alcohol down the drain. Hallelujah. We've solved the problem. You know, they no longer have an issue with alcohol, but we have not dealt with all the surface level or all the those layers that have accumulated over time in which someone had to then reach for some sort of vice of escapism or whatever was momentarily treating this disconnection. And so for her, where again, we're saying, okay, wonderful. Now we're going to monitor. We're going to monitor her eating, or we're going to put her in this facility or whatever it is. And hallelujah, she's eating and processing and digesting her food. We've solved the problem. We've not dealt with all of these layers over time that have contributed contributed to a woman identifying her value and her worth with her physical appearance. And we can go back, and what we found is her mother would put post-it notes around the house and in the pantry and in the kitchen saying, you know, are you sure you want to eat this? And labeling caloric, the caloric count, and a second on your lips, forever on your hips, and all of these little comments, and grabbing her, you know, flab on her side again when she's a child, and like, oh, and bringing her to a doctor and lifting up her shirt and saying, what do you think? She's kind of fat. And I'm like, yeah, she could probably lose some pounds. So at a very ripe age, and again, I'm not even blaming the mother. The mother was a model, a very successful model, where she very early on was taught, this is where my value lies in my physical appearance. So of course, we can only teach the type of love and acceptance and worth and value that we ourselves have taught. And then that's how that generationally gets passed down. So I don't actually make any judgments about or from the people where we got these messages. I'm not saying it's right or wrong or good or bad. I simply point out what is disconnected from truth versus falsehood. What is disconnected from our core essence and the truth of our infinite worth, and the way, again, whether you call it God, source, spirit, creator, sees you in your infinite beauty and sacredness, or the falsehood of what, or of that disconnection or separation that comes when we believe or when our worth has been questioned or devalued.
Oh, I love that, Sarah. You know, what you're saying about that our worth is, you know, infinite. It's not changing, and always coming back to that, you know, mentioning that there is all these external factors that we may be getting our self-worth from, but if it's changing, if it's external, then it has the ability to no longer be there, or, you know, not give us what we need anymore, or not give us that validation. So the minute that we're, you know, hanging onto those external factors to gain that self-worth, you know, whether that is a relationship, whether that is a job title, where whatever that is, because those aspects of our life are always changeable. There's nothing set in stone there. That's when it feels really, not stable. And that's where, you know, then we can have that fluctuation of that self-worth. So I love what you say about coming back to the self and that being the critical key. But I think you also made a really beautiful point about that self-compassion and how important that is, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to keep ourselves safe. And so, of course, we're going to, you know, seek doing these things that potentially aren't in alignment what we really want. But at the same time, that survival is like pushing us in those areas. So it's like, and this is why your work is so important, Sarah, because it's that education piece, is potentially catching yourself before you rely on that external validation and coming back to yourself and your truth. But this is where I guess we will seek that pleasure again, go in those external directions, because these tools aren't being taught what you're talking about. And so I'd love for you to dive in, Sarah, like more on this. How do we create this self-compassion and also self-compassion with ourselves? And like you said, I love how you looked at the lens of the mother, and then we have to have compassion where the mother was and not have that blame. Like, she was doing the best that she could, her mom, you know, and having that understanding. And then also looking at this aspect of, forgiveness and, empowerment to connect back to ourselves, because I feel that at the core of this, it is that disconnect and disconnect, like you said, from our truth, who we are, what really matters. And so I'd love you to talk about what this process has looked like for the women and men that you've worked with. How do you get them to tap into their intuition, their truth, and start building that trust within themselves?
And it is a journey, and not always a comfortable one. But I would say the first step, and you said it, it all begins with more love, grace, and compassion for ourselves than likely we have ever given ourselves or been taught to give ourselves. There is no class on how to build the perception of self-worth in school. There's no class on woman's worth in university, right? We're not really taught.
Unless
these
Sarah
things.
Gets in there.
Yeah, exactly. I know. If anyone knows, junior high school, elementary, I'll speak anywhere.
Oh, I would have loved that.
Even on the Board of Education, hit me up, please.
Yes.
But it's simply highlighting, I think, again, the generations. This isn't just years, decades, but this is generations in which a woman's worth has been devalued or questioned. And we can see it in, you know, not having it modeled to us in very male dominated industries, and obviously there's shifts that have happened with getting more women into positions of power and leadership. But for me, it was even deeper. It's like, this is a spiritual crisis. This is at like the deepest level of like a woman's source of worth. So I think it's the first thing is really understanding all of these things that have been building up over time. I remember like kind of doing this diagram, drawing the circles of self-betrayal, just giving, you know, an example of stories maybe I have heard from various clients and seeing and showing, this is what you can be up against. Then there's, you know, betrayals, there's infidelities, there's times where maybe, you know, rejection, all of the things that lead up to where we, again, question our worth and we stop listening to ourselves or stop trusting our voice. Or our innate power or courage or wisdom, and we source that all externally. And so I remember drawing this drawing and a woman putting up her hand and saying, Sarah, I mean, now that you're drawing this, now that I'm actually seeing this in like a visual, I just feel overwhelmed. I feel like I have hundreds of thousands of layers. I don't even remember all my layers. Am I going to be spending the rest of my life like cleaning this shit up? And I was like, this drawing is not meant to cause overwhelm. It is simply meant to highlight what a human has been up against in terms of the constant messaging that one has received. And so you said something there again, when we're talking about parents, and it's identifying all these various ways we can receive this. But in the innocence of a child, we look to people of influence or authority figures in our life for what is my worth and what is my value and what is my place in the world? How much space am I allowed to take up? What am I allowed to ask for? Does my voice matter? And so at a very young age, this messaging, and that can be well-intentioned loved ones or parents or teachers or religious institutions or whatever it is. But that's just where it begins. And unfortunately, even if it's well-intentioned, I find, again, going back to that concept of if we do not have that own self-worth or ourselves, it will be very challenging to be able to model that to our children. And so it's understanding that, some of maybe this more disempowering belief systems or the separations of the truth of who we are came from people who were in deep states of suffering or their own version of disconnection and separation from their source, and the truth and the reality of who they were. So, that continues to build. And so again, I think the biggest thing is the awareness and then starting to identify in my existing environment. Maybe it is my romantic relationship. Maybe it is a relationship with a parent or a sibling, or it's in a work setting, but what are the areas in which I am compromising or violating my worth or my voice or my spirit, in order to believe that I am enough? And sometimes this is the drop off of clients, which they're like, okay, I see this. I see what I have to. I think I'm good, Sarah.
I'm out.
This is where I get fired. I don't suggest or recommend or try to force anyone through that journey. I have worked with beautiful, beautiful souls who come from cultures in which there's such a thing as pride killings, where, a woman, if her family knew that she lived with and loved another woman and was adopting a child with this woman, her life was at risk from her own family. So I would never, I'm not so naive to say, okay, now life is going to be on, so great on the other side when we step into this greater version of empowerment, because the reality is what stops us from making this journey of a life into or a greater sense of empowerment. The number one thing, or the top things that I think stop people from making the journey, is who will I lose? What will I lose? Or what parts of myself will I lose if I become more empowered? And that's a scary thing when we're potentially going to lose a source of love, even if it's not a healthy or supportive one. A source of love is a source of love. And we as humans will cross any illogical boundaries or borders in order to have those basic human needs met. And being loved is one of the greatest.
Oh, again, so much there, Sarah. I want to come back to what you mentioned about the spiritual aspect of this, because I find that is very fascinating. Because if we pull this all back, we are a spirit in our human form. And so we're all that energy, if you want to look at it that way. And so that is equal. Like the energy is equal. Everyone has this divine spirit within them. And it's just that we've created this constructed hierarchy where we feel and think that people have more authority, that they have greater empowerment over us. Or we start giving our power away here because they look a certain way, they have this title, and we start like just those little tiny things, like you said, about giving your power away. And then we don't realize it's eroding that self-sourced power because we haven't cultivated how we can rely on that intuition. Because I feel as, especially as women, we're always taught to override that intuition. Maybe as, you know, children, we're like, oh, I don't like this like carrot. And we're like, you know, like that's, and then your mom's like, no, you must eat this carrot. Do you know what I mean? Like, just like obviously that's a small thing, but like all these things that we're constantly reinforced, overriding our intuition. So no, you know, when you say this is like a, it's that excavation of slowly unraveling these layers and like that step-by-step process of building up, okay, how, what am I feeling? And giving ourselves that space as well. And I feel like, you know, in our modern reality, we're becoming more and more attention poor, time poor. And so this is where in those moments, we get to tune into our intuition. And so it's like you say, building up those touch points. And yes, it does feel really spiritual in this way. It's though we're in all these aspects that you're talking about, we've forgotten who we are, we've forgotten why we came here. And so your work for me is really connecting us back to that, and that we are all sovereign, and that we, there is no, this person's above me, this person's below me. Like if we look at everyone as that spirit level, we all have that, like you say, that inherent worthiness. And I feel like this is really important with your work, Sarah, because you're teaching, especially women who I see, to allow them to step into their full potential, allow them to use their voice. Because it's interesting what you said about the voice. You know, it's not just yes, speaking your truth, but it's also when we don't speak our truth, that how that is affecting us internally, and how it is important to speak our truth, even if it potentially is going to, like you say, destabilize that relationship. Because it's like, are you choosing you, or are you choosing? And that's what it comes down to. That's what it feels like, that self-betrayal that you're talking about. And so I really feel that you're empowering women to really step into their full potential, allow them to, that self-awareness that you mentioned. And that's the critical key, I feel, is that just notice where they are making those little micro self-betrayal steps, and slowly start to choose a better thought, choose a better action. And what I think is another key point, Sarah, that you bring up, is that shame, to me, when I think about it, it makes me feel really restricted and stagnant. So for me, this work that you're diving into is kind of getting women to take action. And so I'd love for you to speak about that. Is this what you notice with your clients once they start understanding these invisible forces that are keeping them trapped? Do you see them just like bloom and just like step into their action and yeah, feel empowered to do that?
Mm-hmm. I think a number of beautiful shifts can happen when you free yourself from the idea that I'm never enough. Right? What's going to shift? Because again, when you think of the weight of shame or guilt, as we've talked about, it's the heaviest and most disempowering emotions. Just like you said, it feels constrictive. How can you expand into anything in a constricted state? You can't. So you make yourself small. You hide yourself. You don't do things that maybe require risk or trust or willingness or courage. That's where perfectionism and people pleasing comes in. Again, I make decisions more from a place of avoided humiliation And seeking acceptance and approval rather than this is a decision that feels so deeply right, so deeply nourishing and joyful for me. We can move through the life or a life with fear and anxiety and worry that ultimately we will never be enough. So you're sure as hell not going to show up in your relationships fully. And this is where I see a lot more so with women is we often don't ask for our needs to be met. Mm-hmm. And then what will happen when we've overexerted ourselves and, you know, have sacrificed all of our needs for other people, then, you know, I see the consequences of that or the weight of that, you know, with working with women in their 40s, 50s, 60s of living life, ultimately sacrificing, whether it's her identity, who she is, her passions, her dreams, her joys for other people. The only natural outcome of that is resentment and anger. Mm. And it can be resentment, it can be regret, that sort of thing. So again, it's how we show up in our relationships, whether we're actually asking for our needs to be met, whether we're willing to express our full human, messy, imperfect self with those that we love, which most importantly allows us to be loved, to be seen and understood and loved in our ultimate self-expression. Because it's deeply exhausting. There's really no relaxation in a relationship in which you have to constantly conform and adapt and think about the right thing to say or how to be or decisions to make out of fear of, will this person still stick around and still love me? I see a lot of women start to birth more creative projects into the world. It can be actually baking. It can be cooking. It can be painting, it can be artistry, it can be new businesses, it can be all sorts of things, because again, we're human beings that are meant to create. And so what shame does, again, we're not going to do things if it potentially risks judgment from others. And if we are not allowing creativity to flow through us, I believe it manifests then as depression, because we're keeping this powerful and sacred creative force turned inward rather than allowing it to flow outward. So again, I see so many, it prevents a lot of us from being able to model a healthy level of self-esteem and self-love to our children and future generations. So there are so many things that can cost us, but going back to what you were saying, just about like the spiritual crisis nature of it. And if we're talking about David Hawkins's work, he developed this map of human consciousness with you, which you and I have discussed in the past, where again, shame was he determined the heaviest and most disempowering emotion. But what it does is if you're remaining in that state for a long time, that starts to shape your world of view. Mm. Meaning that is your view of a godlike figure, if you believe in it, meaning it is a God that is more angry and vengeful, not one that is unconditionally loving. That then creates your worldview of yourself or how you perceive yourself, which is, I am bad. I am wrong. I am unworthy of love, whatever that is. I'm not good enough. That forms your worldview of others and the world around you. And ultimately in that state, what I say is shame has to eventually express itself outward. It can't remain inwards. And it does so in one of two ways, which is either harm towards others or harm towards ourselves. And so that can be on a physical level of, again, I've seen teens, all types of self-harm, and that can continue well into 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. That can also be at a form of sabotage. Again, I'm not, you know, I have this deep longing and desire to birth this new business or this new form of art into the world, but I just won't take that risk. And so that's a form of self-harm and self-betrayal. We can actually push away relationships. I've seen this quite often. I'm going to push away this relationship before they see how unlovable I am, or how effed up or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality is it's shame is not rooted in truth and the truth of who we are and the truth of who other people are. And so it creates this kind of distorted self-perception that leads to all types of harmful behavior that prevents us from having the inner freedom and liberation to live a life rooted in, again, love or joy or excitement or trust or willingness or courage or wisdom or all of the beautiful qualities that are inherent in every human. There is no room for them when we're in a state of fear of not being good enough.
With this, Sarah, for me, this is where mentorship becomes really important, and also community. And so I would love to know your thoughts on how, you know, by creating a community, like a safe space, why this is so important. Because I have this driver at the moment to come together, a community, like, you know, women supporting women, men supporting women, you know, like just us coming together. And the thing that I love about you, Sarah, is you have this really non-judgmental energy. And so I understand why your clients are so attracted to you, because, yeah, it's definitely felt. So I'd love to know what your thoughts on the mentorship and community play in really driving this movement.
Yeah. I think it's very key. And I think a difference between the hero versus the heroine's journey, which is a lot of Joseph Campbell or Carol Pearson, Jean Houston's work, more specifically on the hero's journey. But the key difference between the two is men typically, you know, they muscle through. It's a very solo journey on their own. Whereas the differentiator with women, it's almost the Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz story. It's she needs community, and there's deep love and support for others, and others kind of remind Dorothy of her own power. So it's the same sort of thing I find with women making this journey, is community is deeply, deeply important. I'm not saying it's not important for men. I think men have, again, more so been taught or not taught maybe that value. Mm. Or again, it's more of a, you know, got to force through and muscle through this problem or journey on my own. And so I think mentorship, and whether you have, and you said it, an unconditionally loving container in either community or working one-on-one with someone, is when you are up against the years and decades of this messaging, it does require, again, this container in which you can share some of these things, likely situations or experiences from your past that you may have judged or blamed yourself or are still carrying the weight of, in which you can actually start to let it go and almost be, it's like your mind needs to be reprogrammed into a more loving and compassionate response to some of the choices that we have made or some of the things that have happened to us mistakes or regrets from the past that we all made based on us coming from that disconnected state or that separation from the truth of who we are. And so that's what I see a lot, is it's whether it was men who had, you know, a pornography addiction or situations from, you know, when they were in high school or university and how they treated women in the past, and now they have daughters and like, oh my gosh. And like the, you know, immense shame of all of that versus also women, you know, going through their own sexual exploration and all the shame around women's sexuality. It's identifying that many of these choices that we may carry shame over or guilt over, we made them at a time in our life in which we were all disconnected from our true infinite worth and the sacredness of who we are and the core essence, our the highest and truest and most empowered version of ourselves. So there is, it's not forgiveness in a religious connotation, but there is a releasing or a letting go of the blame and the weight that you've been carrying of the past. And I find that even like from an energetic perspective, that frees up then, okay, now things feel more hopeful. Things feel more exciting. I'm starting to see the you know, a new realm of possibility. I'm starting to be able to have more courageous conversations. Maybe I'm starting to make transitions in my life that I once avoided out of fear of what other people would think. So it's all connected in that, but I think that's the power of mentorship, which we both experienced and benefited from. It's a reminder from someone. It's simply a reflection back of the innate worth and power and capabilities and wisdom and strength of an individual when maybe your entire life you did not see that in yourself, or you were never taught to or allowed to see that in yourself. It's almost like going to a gym and working a new muscle.
Yes. I love this so much. Thank you so much, Sarah. I would love to know where we can follow your journey and what your current offerings are as well. I would love to know how people can work deeper with you.
Wonderful. Thank you. My website is saralajeunesse.com. Maybe you can... I a lot of people get the spam, right? But you can,
yeah.
Same thing on Instagram, sarah.lajeunesse. I think it's the same for Facebook, but so there is a discovery questionnaire or clarity call questionnaire that they can fill out if their interest is piqued and they want to learn more. Typically I do, like I said, it is weekly 30-minute touch points with clients, and I have a much different approach where I'm also in someone's corner any day of the week when these shame spirals come up, or when people are on the brink of, okay, I need to navigate this courageous conversation I've been avoiding. All right, you know, I'm nervous about doing it, or whatever it is. I am available in my clients' lives when those things can really hold us hostage. Mm-hmm. If any of this piques anyone's interest, that's where they can find me.
So powerful. Thank you, Sarah. And you also do a Ruthless Tuesday news, which I absolutely love. I love.
Yes. Thank you so much for your time, Sarah. Absolutely adore you.
I adore you. Thank you so much for having me. It's always so good to chat with you.
Thanks for tuning into Star Being. May the wisdom shared resonate in your soul. Until next time, stay connected and keep reaching for the stars. This is Star Being signing off.